Hi folks, before we begin, I just want to play a quick promo for the podcast Three Spooked Girls. It's a podcast in which Tara and Jessica dive into significant true crime cases and the history and haunts and creepy places all around the world. Have a listen and check them out.
Hey there, I'm Tara.
And I'm Jessica, and together we co-host the podcast Three Spooked Girls.
If you love the paranormal...
or murder.
Join us on Mondays for full-length episodes where we discuss our favorite paranormal stories and true crime cases.
And join us again on Thursdays for our mini-sodes called Stabby Snippets, where we tell you all about true crimes happening in the news.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, wherever the hell else you listen to your pods at. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook by using the handle at Three Spooked Girls.
Come and hang out with us and get your spooky on while we scare the hell out of you.
Also, just a reminder that if you want to support the podcast in any way, you can do so over at patreon.com/thetroublespodcast or at buymeacoffee.com/troublespodcast. Or you can just tell your friends. It all helps. Thanks, and let's get on with the show. Rose Dugdale is an English woman who was born into an extremely wealthy family. She would have nothing to worry about and a comfortable, lavish life ahead of her. But instead of this life of opulence, she chose to join the IRA and stage an ambitious bombing raid and one of the most talked about art heists in Irish history. This is her story. This is the Troubles podcast, a podcast which explores the violence and bloodshed that occurred in Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, and Great Britain as multiple sides and organisations waged a conflict over the status of Northern Ireland. Rose Dugdale was born in Devon, England, in 1941. Her father was an underwriter at Lloyds Bank in London and was very wealthy, owning two properties, one in London and a larger estate in Devon. Rose had a very privileged childhood, describing it here.
It was a wonderful childhood with horses and sport and fishing and shooting and all that stuff, and I got good training in that.
She was educated in Miss Ironside's School for Girls before finishing her education overseas. Then, at 18, she was presented as a debutante in front of Queen Elizabeth. A debutante is essentially an upper-class young woman making her first appearance in fashionable society. She also attended a number of coming-out parties, which were parties held where it was expected that she would find a husband. She didn't like the coming-out parties.
I mean, coming out was awful, terrible. It was a succession of dances and dinners beforehand where you chatted up the host, who was probably a businessman, a bit like my father, and you then tried to pair off with a couple of the fellows, so in order to be invited to dance. And no, it was a marriage market. It was just horrible. It was as if you were being sold as a commodity. I didn't enjoy it at all and really wanted to get out of it.
That same year, she began studying philosophy, politics and economics at St. Anne's College in Oxford. Her father supported her request to study in university, but was opposed to her subject choice. I'd imagine at the time, these subjects weren't considered very ladylike. While in Oxford, Rose and others would dress up as men and protest at Oxford Union, who had forbidden women to become members. She then went on to get a master's degree in the USA and then completed a PhD in economics in the University of London. She went on to become a lecturer and economist in London. It was 1968, which was a year of protests all around the world, spurred on by opposition to the Vietnam War and the civil rights movement in the USA. This spread over to the United Kingdom, and a number of student occupations took place around Great Britain. In Northern Ireland, the first civil rights march took place, and the Northern Irish civil rights movement was based heavily on the one going on in the USA. Rose was swept up in this movement and moved over to Manchester, where an occupation was ongoing. It was there she was first made aware of the situation in Northern Ireland. She then went on to visit Cuba, and by 1972, at the age of 31, she had decided to drastically change the direction that her life was going. She quit her job, sold her house and cashed in her share of her family's fortune, which was around £150,000 at the time. She distributed this money to the poor in North London and then began campaigning for their rights. She also began to distance herself from her family.
Well, at that stage, I wasn't living at home anymore. And, I mean, it was tragic for them. I'm quite sure it was, and I know it was. But at the same time, it was just something that had to happen. And, I mean, this was my life, and this is what I wanted to do, and there wasn't any stopping me.
By this stage, Rose and her partner at the time, Walter Heathen, had made numerous trips over to Northern Ireland, and Rose was disgusted at the sight of British soldiers firing guns at nationalist civilians. Then, when 14 civilians were killed by British soldiers in what became known as Bloody Sunday, that was a tipping point for Rose. She describes,
I mean, the attitudes in England were nobody cared the fact that 14 people had been killed by the British Army in Derry. It was an absolutely horrific event, and there was no question that you needed to do everything you could to support that cause, to free the Irish people from their stranglehold, which was the British imperialist relations. I remember thinking that, you know, if you're involved in this, you need to accept the possibility that at the end of the day you may have to kill people. And I tried to wrestle with that thought and dealt with it so much that I was accepting the recognition that there can come a time when you may or may not want to kill people, but at the end of the day, it's the only way to deal with them.
She began her involvement with the IRA by first trying to fund them. Her and her boyfriend were arrested in 1973 after they broke into her family home and stole £82,000 worth of paintings and silverware. Police believe that the plan was for the money to be sent to the IRA in Northern Ireland. During the trial, Rose denounced her family and background and said to her father, "I love you, but hate everything you stand for." Rose received a 2-year suspended sentence for this crime, as the judge didn't believe that she intended to cause any further violence, which proved to be incorrect. In fact, just months after this trial, Rose moved over to Ireland and joined an active IRA cell. Her first operation with this cell was quite an ambitious one. In January 1974, Rose and other IRA members held a pilot hostage and hijacked their helicopter in the Irish county of Donegal. The pilot was then ordered to fly over an RUC station in the town of Strabane, Northern Ireland. They then dropped bombs, which were inside milk churns from the helicopter, on the station. The bombs failed to explode and the operation was unsuccessful, but this attack became the first helicopter bombing raid in Britain and Ireland's history, and Rose believes that it caused the RUC and British Army to start defending their encampments from air attacks, which is something they hadn't been concerned about up until this point. As a result of the attack, Rose became wanted for questioning and her picture was shared across police stations in Ireland and Britain. She went into hiding and began to plan her next attack, which would take place just 3 months after the helicopter one. Rose and three other IRA members broke into Rusborough House in the Irish county of Wicklow. The house was the home of Sir Alfred Bate, who was an ex-British Conservative Party politician, philanthropist and art collector. He had amassed a substantial collection of paintings in his home in Wicklow, and Rose believed that they could use these paintings as leverage. They broke into the house, pistol-whipped the 74-year-old man before dragging his wife down a flight of stairs and then tying the two of them up. They then proceeded to steal 19 paintings from his house, which had a total value of around £8 million. The IRA then issued a ransom note saying that they would return the paintings in exchange for £500,000 and the release of sisters Dolores and Marion Price, who were the two sisters convicted of the Old Bailey bombing in London, and were currently serving their sentences in England. Initially, the insurers offered £100,000 for the safe return of the paintings, insisting that they would never be able to find buyers for such high-profile stolen paintings. The Irish police, the Gardaí, then began a nationwide manhunt to find the paintings and soon struck gold in the Irish county of Cork. They heard that a lone woman had rented a cottage there, and when they approached the house, a woman came out wearing a wig and trying to speak French to them. It was Rose in disguise. This ruse failed and she was quickly arrested, with the paintings being discovered in the boot of a car on the property. The art theft caused a media circus, and news of the theft made its way across the ocean, to the USA, where Time magazine wrote of Rose, quote, "She had everything that money could buy, a childhood spent romping on a 600-acre estate in Western England. The right schools, a grand tour of Europe at the age of 14, and a trust fund set up by her wealthy, doting parents that yielded her thousands of dollars annually. Yet last week, Bridget Rose Dugdale, 33-year-old daughter of a British insurance tycoon, was in jail again." The IRA were quick to cut ties with Rose and went as far as to say that she was never a member of the IRA. Here's IRA spokesperson Dahi O'Connell speaking about her.
Was she, a member of the Provisional IRA?
No, she was not. No.
Did she ever, did she ever want to become a member?
I couldn't say so, if she had expressed any desire to become part of the movement. As I say, she was not unknown to us.
But did you know her?
Not personally.
From what I've read, Rose was extremely anti-capitalist and very influenced by socialism, and her views may not have been in line with the IRA. After her arrest, Rose was brought to Dublin, where she was tried for the theft and the helicopter bombing. She was sentenced to 9 years for these crimes. She used her time in the court as a podium to get her opinion across, shouting, quote, "The British have an army of occupation in a small part of Ireland, but not for long." Her father then issued a statement saying, quote, "I don't want to appear hard-hearted, but I've done everything I can for her. She knows perfectly well she could turn to me if she wanted to." When asked how did she plea, Rose responded with, quote, "Proudly and incorruptibly guilty." While on trial, Rose discovered that she was pregnant. The baby's father was IRA member Eddie Gallagher, who she had met when she first arrived in Ireland. After 1 year behind bars, Eddie decided to try and have Rose freed. So he staged the kidnap of Dutch businessman Tida Harama in Limerick. He said he would free him if Rose was released from prison. This attempt was unsuccessful, and Harama was eventually located and released after the Gardaí had a 2-week siege with Gallagher. Gallagher was given a lengthy sentence for this kidnapping. Strangely enough, Harama spoke about the kidnap in 2005, where he believed that Gallagher's sentence was too long. He said, quote, "They were so young, younger than my eldest child at the time. Eddie Gallagher was sentenced to 25 years. Just imagine a young man of 20 going to jail for 25 years. That is terrible." Meanwhile, Rose was in prison in Limerick, where she gave birth to a baby boy, Rory, who stayed with her for the first 4 months of his life. Then, when Rose went on hunger strike, Rory went to stay with a family member on the outside who looked after him while she was in jail. In 1978, the Irish government allowed Rose and Eddie to marry, which was the first time in the history of the state that two prisoners were allowed to marry. The ceremony took place in Limerick Prison, and there was a heavy police presence there. Rose was eventually released from prison after serving 2/3 of her sentence. She immediately began demonstrating and showing her support for the Irish Republican prisoners during the 1981 hunger strike. She then focused her attention on the heroin epidemic which was going on in Dublin at the time. Rose joined the group who were known as the Concerned Parents Against Drugs. The group's aim was to force drug dealers out of areas where they were operating by any means possible, which sometimes included using violence. It was suspected that the IRA were involved in carrying out punishment beatings to drug dealers. Speaking about this, Rose said,
"I mean, if the movement in Dublin at the time had decided that the drug pushers need to be confronted with weapons, and the IRA was the ideal organisation to do that, but I think that would have been a very forced decision."
In later life, Rose continued to protest against capitalism. Over the years, she's been honoured by the political party Sinn Féin as a veteran activist. As of writing in 2020, Rose is nearing 80 and still living in Dublin City. She has never returned to the United Kingdom. When interviewed by the Republican newspaper on Publocht, Rose said of her actions, quote, "I did what I wanted to do. I am proud to have been part of the Republican movement, and I hope that I have played my very small part in the success of the armed struggle." There is no doubt that Rose is fondly remembered as a prominent Republican during the Troubles. But for those who have lost family members to paramilitary violence, they will no doubt have a different opinion of Rose Dugdale and the war that she waged. Thanks, and see you next time.